going to tape this, so we're going to roll the tape.
Roll the tape, Mary Ellen. My name is Kent Burgess. I'm the business manager here at Holden, and one of my functions is to serve as liaison with the Forest Service. And I'll be talking a little bit about the Forest Service's reclamation plans with the tailings. This is Rudy Edmond, our curator of our Portal Museum, and longtime Holdenite from the very beginning. Our resident geologist and most informed person about the tailings. I think our approach for this session is Rudy's going to tell you a little bit about what the tailings are and where they came from. And then I'll deal mostly with the intended reclamation project over the next 3 to 4 years.
Okay, thank you, Kent. Tailings are, as you understand from the word, something that's left over. And in mining, there are always waste products. Products that you separate from the real thing that you want. In this case, we have two kinds of tailings in the valley. And the one kind is the kind you see up high, the two big piles up that come down from the top level, the third level of the mine, the gray tailings. And
this is an overhead photo taken from an airplane.
Yeah.
And these are the two piles Rudy's talking about.
Yeah, those two piles are the result of digging into the mountain to get at the ore body. The ore body was buried as a slice back in Copper Mountain, and in order to reach it, they had to drive tunnels back into the mountain, and when you do that, you get a lot of waste rock that has to be brought out and piled up. Well, those are the piles. And actually, there were some 56 miles of tunnels that had to be developed inside of Copper Mountain in order to get the ore out from the ore body to the mill. Now, the other kind of tailings that we have, which are the tailings that are shown down in the lower area, and the much larger mass of tailings, are those that came from the processing of the ore body itself. And the ore body is a mass that is in the mountain about 80 feet across, and it extends about a half a mile in the horizontal and about a half a mile vertical that they actually mine. So that's a very large volume of material. That material was brought out of the mountain through one tunnel, the haulage tunnel, and then brought to the mill. And when it got to the mill served the function of grinding it down to a very fine size. In fact, it's the size of ordinary silt, you know. And so it's a material that will be easily picked up by the wind because it is small size and is easily carried in the valley when it dries out. Now, when the tailings were first put out there from the mill, the tailings in the valley here were all dark gray to black. In fact, when they were wet, they were essentially black. And then they dried out to a gray color. And then the gray color over the years has changed to a rusty brown to yellow color. So now all you see when you see those big piles are the rusted surface of those black tailings. And what happens in the tailings is that they change chemically. And when the tailings were first brought out, if we understand what the composition of them is, it'll help. Because the ore body itself was what we call a sulfide ore body. And the metals that were in the ore body were were associated with sulfur. And so we have the main mineral that they were after was chalcopyrite, and that is about equal parts of sulfur and iron and copper. And of course the copper was the thing that they were mining to get out, and that's what produced the copper metal. And the gold was associated with those copper minerals. So in this sulfide mass of material, the copper was the thing that was mainly the main target of the ore body. Now, in order to get that separated from the mass of material, so as you know, here's a sample of the ore itself, but most of this material in here is extraneous material that can't be used. And so in order to get the material that you want that can be used, that's the chalcopyrite, you have to grind it down. Then the mill, the chunks came into the mill about 6 inches in diameter as a maximum. And then by the time it got down to the base of the mill, by the grinding process, it was down to a very fine, almost a powdery size. Then they could float the material out of this mass by putting it in water, stirring it up and raising bubbles, and the chalcopyrite, which was what they wanted, came up on the bubbles, and then all they had to do was to scrape the bubbles aside and dry that, and then they had the sulfide concentrate that they could sell. And that's what went out of here and went from here to Tacoma for smelting. So there was no smelting here, and then what was left over became the tailings that's down in the valley here. A good way to think about it, I think, is that in the mill, every day, they put through 2,000 tons of this ore material into the mill and then ground it down. And when they got through with the process of concentrating, getting the concentrate out, they got from 5 to 7 or 8 buckets of concentrate, and each bucket would hold 5 tons. So you see, in a day's, normal day's operation, they would get from 5 to 7 of these 5-ton pails. So 25 tons, you see, to 50 tons would be about the maximum that they would have that they could sell. All of the rest of the 2,000 tons, you see, would be tailings that were carried out into the valley. Now, the nature of those tailings is such that when you grind it down very fine, you make it very susceptible to the action of water and the air, so that the rain and the air then changes those very fine particles that are left over. And much of the material that's out there is very rich in sulfur. And when you add water to the sulfur and allow that chemistry to work, what do you get? Sulfuric acid, you see, which is a very acidic kind of thing. That's why you can't just go out there and plant the tailings, because it's much too acid. And the pH, for example, of that material runs somewhere around to 3 to 4, where a normal would be 7. And so it's like planting things in pickle juice, you know, wouldn't grow. So it's just much too acid, it has to be sweetened if it's going to grow organic things. So that's a problem. The acid nature of all of this material that's out here. Now, it's probably easiest to think about the volume of this in terms of acres. There's roughly 80 acres, between 80 and 90 acres of this material spread out over the valley. And that the depth of that, at certain points, it's up to 120 feet deep. On the average, you know, it's something in the order of 80 feet deep. 80 feet deep on the average and 80 acres, you know. So if you, that's, those are easy numbers to kind of keep in your mind. So it's a very large volume of material. Now, that's the reality of what we have. We have inherited a wonderful gift in that the ore body paid for all of the buildings and everything that happened in the development of this valley, including the road. See, so that all came out as profit from the mine, and when the mine was finally closed down, we have inherited those things. See, the buildings and the property as such. We have also inherited a scar in the forest. And that scar is present, you see, mainly in the form of these fine mill tailings that are easily carried by the wind. They have now oxidized, and the wind picks them up very easily, and they're spread through the valley. The other problem, of course, relates to the stream that cuts along the side of it. And in case of a flood, it's only natural that the stream might cut in to those tailings. And if they did, they would simply go down as a mass of material down into Lake Chelan. So the problem of pollution is very, very keenly recognized by all people who look at things of this kind that are polluting a natural environment. So the pollution that comes from this is mainly from the wind, for the most part, but also the potential of the stream cutting into it in times of flood. Now, I'm told by the people who are watching what's happening to the stream, the wildlife people and the forestry people, looking at what this dust is doing to the valley. One of the things, if you just look at the stream, these very fine particles are heavy, much heavier than water. So when the dust hits the stream, the dust simply goes to the bottom of the stream. And what does it do there? It simply fills in around every pebble that's on the bottom of the stream. Until finally, you see, after a period of years of blowing dust, the bottom of the stream is just like a pavement, and it's absolutely sterile from the point of view of organic growth. So the trout cannot find any food because there's no place for little plants and little bugs to be at the bottom of the stream. So the water simply flows across that, and the trout flow back and forth. But they really can't stay there for any length of time because they can't find any food. Now, so this kind of gives you maybe an understanding of why we have tailings in the first place. And you see some over 10 million tons of material was brought out of Copper Mountain. And only about 500,000 of that material was saleable, something in the way of sulfide minerals that could be sent on to the smelter. And out of the smelter, you see, they got, finally, a lot of copper, a lot of gold, a small amount of silver, and some zinc. And they had mainly just two kinds of sulfides that they sold. They sold chalcopyrite, which had the gold associated with it, and they sold what was called sphalerite, which is the zinc mineral, sulfide mineral, which had the silver associated with it. So that's what came out of the mountain, and what's left over is our product. And we inherited that as well, you see, in the valley. So now I think, Kent, maybe you can kind of tell us what's in what people have in mind for correcting this, because we're all interested in getting rid of the potential pollution and the actual pollution that's going on.
Just say a little bit about ownership of the property and the Forest Service's involvement here. First of all, this is just one panel of aerial photography that the Forest Service took. Here's tailings pile number one, which is the smallest table. This is only part of tailings pile number two, and tailings pile number three would bring it out to about here. They did all of their survey work off these aerial photographs. It's kind of amazing to see the maps that they made off of the photographs. When the village was donated by the Howe Sound Mining Company, with it came some patented land, patented claims that it's owned by the village. Howe Sound Mining Company, I think, was pretty smart in the way that they claimed land, because we happen to own this land, which is the land that the tailings isn't on. The tailings is on Forest Service property. So Holden owns this property here with the two waste piles that Rudy talked about. However, Holden has unpatented mining claims on the three tailings. And you might ask, why mining claims? Well, there's still gold left in those tailings, but not very much. Approximately, we've just got some results back from some core drilling that took place earlier this summer, that there's somewhere around 0.02 ounces per ton of gold left in there. It's somewhat amazing, but predictions were that if there was somewhere between 0.03 and 0.04 ounces per ton, that a profitable mining venture could happen on these tailings by reprocessing them and recovering that gold. The goal of Holden, because there was no federal money available and Holden Village clearly didn't have the money, is the only way in the past that we ever saw that we were going to be able to reclaim those tailings was if we could entice a mining company to come in, reprocess it, remove the gold, or really remove all the sulfides, which would make that a more neutral substance, easier to reclaim and replant. And that's really what Holden's efforts have been for the last 25 years. Just point out a couple areas on tailings pile one. This area down here that you see maybe if you walked up there in the bottom of the lagoon is used to be a Jerusalem artichoke field. And I've seen photographs where those were 8-10 feet tall.
Yeah, right.
They were sprinklered. Holden's sewage effluent used to be sprinklered up on the tailings, and that's basically what made the Jerusalem artichokes grow. There was this one time a goal that the Jerusalem artichokes could be distilled and that alcohol fuel could be produced and that we'd run our buses on alcohol fuel. The county, the EPA, the Forest Service, everyone eventually said that Holden couldn't continue to spray its effluent on the tailings. The runoff and concern about Railroad Creek eliminated that future option. So down here you can see the drain field that we put in 1986 and 87. I just mentioned a little bit, up here, which is kind of above the lagoon, are some test areas that were replanted by involvement with the Bureau of Mines and I believe Washington State University. There's also, you'll see trees growing in here, and I don't know if Art Holstein is here, but Art was involved in the planting of a lot of those trees. There's been a lot of experiments to see what we could get to grow on the tailings. Some of this matter is still alive, but it's not growing well. However, if you walk along the edge of the tailings, you can note that the forest or Mother Nature is starting to reclaim those tailings. Nobody knows how long that would take, but it would be clearly longer than any of us are going to be here. The Forest Service goal is to kind of to somehow enhance Mother Nature's role in there, and to increase the or to reduce the amount of time it'll take to get those reforested. This site was studied as a Superfund site. There was money set aside by the government given to the EPA to clean up toxic areas in the United States. It was determined that what was happening here, even though environmentally damaging, really didn't meet the criteria for the toxic site that they wanted. So it appeared at one point that possibly some money was going to be available there. That disappeared, but just really 2 years ago, some money was given to the Department of Agriculture to fund projects that they, quote, call not quite Superfund sites. The Department of Agriculture is what the Forest Service is a part of, and that money filtered down to the Forest Service, and this is the first project that the Forest Service is looking at working with that money. I'll tell you a little bit about how they plan on attacking this. First of all, when the money was awarded, they went out and contracted with the Pacific Northwest Labs, Battelle, in the Tri-Cities here, south of Holden, Richland, Kennewick area, who in turn contracted with a large engineering firm, CH2M Hill, out of Bellevue, Washington. And together, they have worked the last year on putting together a rehab plan. One area of concern is right here where the original portal of the mine is. There's a drainage. If you've been up on the third level, coming right out of the portal is a small stream of water. That water is loaded with zinc and copper. It drains down here and gets into Railroad Creek right about here. About 3 miles down the road, it's diluted enough that they can hardly pick it up, but they're still concerned about the amount of copper and zinc. What they're going to do is build a new channel for this drainage. They're going to riprap it with gravel and rock, and they're going to put in 250 feet of it in limestone. And the lime, the hope is that the water running over the lime will basically separate out that copper and zinc. They don't really see that as a permanent solution, but that's as far as they've gotten now. Eventually, they're talking about the possibility of some settling ponds after it's ran across the line. They're concerned about Railroad Creek, and they're concerned about what they call a 100-year flood or a massive flood through the valley. There was a flood here in 1948. I think 70-degree temperatures early in the spring, very rapid. If you came up on the boat and you heard them talk about Prince Creek, when that washed out, Prince Creek, I think that was 1948, the same thing really happened in this valley. They're concerned that that could happen again. When the tailings piles were built, there was wood cribbing, logs built, walls to hold the tailings in there. And that wood has rotted away. The first area of concern for them is that the tailings that flood could cause those to collapse. So they're going to basically riprap the whole sides all along the creek of the tailings. And you can just see how Railroad Creek comes right into tailings pile number two. This is the first area that they'll work on right here. That's the biggest area of concern for them. When we say riprap, they're basically talking about large boulders that will be anywhere from 10 to 15 feet high on the sides of the tailings. They're concerned about runoff coming off of Copper Mountain and settling on the tailings here. They're going to build, this took me a long time, they're going to build what they're calling interceptor swales. It took me a long time to figure out an interceptor swale is a ditch. I sat through three meetings and finally asked what an interceptor swale was, and somebody told me it was a ditch. Basically, the goal, there are several breaking points in here that these ditches will be really just gentle swales that take the runoff and route it around the tailings. And their goal is to keep runoff from getting on the tailings and leaching down through the tailings. The tailings will be slightly graded so the water won't stand. And you can see right here, in the spring especially, we have large standing water on the tailings there. And that'll be graded so that it'll run off into Railroad Creek and into Copper Creek here. So that basically it doesn't sit there and leach down through the tailings. They're basically, outside of a little bit of grading on piles 2 and 3, they've decided that they're pretty stable right where they're at, and that they would be best not to mess with those. However, tailings pile number 1 will be knocked down here. There's a large ridge right here, and they're going to take off approximately 30 feet of that and put it back into the lagoon here, and then reshape tailings pile number 1. I'm kind of excited about that because we talked them into a 1-2 slope on that, which I think will make for excellent cross-country skiing.
And I think maybe I can add a note here that on tailings number 1, you see a depression in the tailing. And the reason for that depression is that they pump back some of those tailings back into the mine, at the request, really, of the forestry people to get it out of the valley. And they also had an economic reason for wanting to take from tailings number 1. They had stated in their annual report that they left behind, in tailings number 1, $1 million of gold. Now, that was gold at $35 an ounce. And that if they were going to put tailings back into the mountain, they were going to put tailings back that, you know, had some value. But they were not economically extractive. It was not an economic feat at that time. But if the gold would be recoverable, it would be on their patented lease and not on the Forest Service land. So they had a reason for doing that, and that turned out to be a bad experiment because the stope, the big hole that they put it in, finally gave out at the bottom, and all of that material went down into the mine, and it flooded 3 levels of the mine below where they put those tailings. And that cost the company, well, in 1951, this is basically when it came to a head, they did not pay a dividend because it cost them roughly $1 million just to clean up that accident. Nobody lost their lives, but it was a disaster in many ways.
We've mentioned the runoff out of the portal that's a concern. We've mentioned the sides of the tailings, which will be riprapped, which is a concern. But that still actually hasn't done anything with the tailings piles. They're going to come in after tailings pile 1 is recontoured, and they're going to put in 26 what they're calling islands of vegetation. And these islands are approximately 1/4 acre in size. What they're going to do with they're going to come in with the tailings, or tailings piles, and they're going to scoop out an area. They're going to put in, first of all, about 18 inches of lime to try to neutralize the tailings. They're going to put in then 12 inches of gravel on top of the lime, and then they're going to put in 12 inches of topsoil. They're then going to revegetate those with native grasses and trees, and then cover the whole thing with gravel so it doesn't blow away. And the concept is the grasses and trees will come up through the gravel.
Approximately below that to prevent seepage down through it? Or
what's that?
Will they put a layer of clay or anything to make it impervious?
No, I think the idea with the gravel there is to try to hold some moisture. I think they want there to hold some moisture for that. But they're basically going to be slightly graded so that the water doesn't run in, doesn't accumulate in there like lakes.
One of the problems, there is no clay available in the area. You know, this is a recently glaciated area, and there's no clay really that has developed. We have gravel and sand, but no clay.
What is the parameters of Holden Village's ownership? You said that the tailings 1, 2, and 3 are Forest Service?
Forest Service property.
That tailing 1 lies between then the patented area and the village itself.
The village is not, the property the village is on is not is on Forest Service land. We do not own the land that the village sits on. We own the buildings, and we operate under a 20-year lease with the Forest Service for the property. So the only property that we own is in here, and that's approximately 240 acres.
Yeah, right.
So the village is not patented.
The village is not. I think that's probably one of the reasons that the Portal Museum was built where it was.
That's right.
Was to get the museum put up on in case. However, the Forest Service loves Holden Village and has been very supportive of us, and I anticipate that the lease will continue. Once they're done putting the vegetated islands in, which will cover approximately 8 acres of this 80 to 90 acres, they're then going to cover the whole tailings with approximately 4 inches of gravel. And that's been estimated by the contractor to be approximately 10,000 dump truck loads of gravel that will be put on the tailings.
That gravel is going to come from right at the top of the switchbacks, which is known as Dan's Camp. There is a good gravel deposit at that point, and so that's where it'll come from.
And you have to go to the mine, switchback up from there?
No, down the switchbacks coming up the road. If you look as you get past what we call the winter turnaround, if you happen to, when you go out, it's a wide area. You start to go down the hill, there's a road that takes off, and that leads to that. There, besides the concern about flood, the portal drainage, the biggest concern has been windblown particles. And if you go down the valley, you find tailings all the way down Railroad Creek Valley. The gravel will hopefully stop those tailings from blowing down valley. And then I think the goal is to sit back and let the 26 islands of vegetation and the sides of the mountain try to reclaim that. It'll be gray in color. I guess Rudy mentioned the fisheries. A couple of things that are not included in this contract that are being worked on right now is one, the what to do with the portal runoff and whether they're going to put in some settling ponds. They, after they're all done, they want to come in and mechanically churn up the bottom of the creek. That cemented the tailings. It just basically cemented the bottom, and there really isn't any insect life for that. They want to then build holding places with rocks and logs and to try to reestablish the fisheries in this area. Also, the planting of these tailings of these islands of vegetation is not included in this current contract. So those three things are still outstanding. The Forest Service's, my question about the islands of vegetation is the Forest Service felt that they potentially may undertake that project with their own people, which is to plant those. Went to bid the 15th of July, and a contract was awarded, around the 3rd of August, to a company called Del Hur out of Port Angeles, Washington, and the contract was for $3,150,000. They anticipate that the work that I described will begin this fall and will reach completion in 1992. Some hope that maybe they can reach completion by the fall of 1991. The service has it scheduled through 1992. The first things that they'll be starting on this fall will be the development of this gravel pit at Dan's Camp. They will scoop off all the topsoil and stockpile it, and that topsoil will be saved for these islands of vegetation. They'll then start to process the gravel and stockpile the gravel. They're going to need to widen the road in what we refer to as the narrows, call it halfway down to Lucerne, where the road narrows and there's some sharp rock areas. They'll be blasting in that area, and then the boulders and large rock that come out of that will be used for the riprap. They will be building some bridges to protect the village and the summer life of the village. A bridge will be built down by a mile out of the village that will go across Railroad Creek and come in at the bottom of tailings pile number 3. And all the traffic will be routed from there. The hope is that we won't have, minimally have any traffic through the village. Through the narrows area, the road will be widened approximately 10 to 12 feet, which will be good for us. So I think the goals for this fall are develop the gravel pit to widen the road and get the bridges in low water. And they anticipate right now that they'll be working through November 6th. Potentially, the first barge runs of equipment will be coming up on Monday. And I haven't got confirmation on that, but that was the original date that I did. They'll be bringing up a track backhoe, a D8 Cat, 3 dump trucks, a gravel crusher, a road grader, a water truck, a fuel truck. There's going to be an infusion of life into this valley. The construction crews will be housed at Lucerne, which is where you got off the boat, and there's some open land back there that the Forest Service will set up as a construction camp for them. They anticipate that they'll begin work in the spring, approximately May 1st. It will just depend on the weather, but the hope is to begin May 1st and work through mid-November.
You mean they'll transport them down there daily and back?
Right. This year it won't be too far because most of their work will be in the narrow section of the road and at the gravel pit, which will be closer to Lucerne.
Did you say the island's vegetation will be on tailings pile number 1 only?
No, 1, 2, and 3.
All 3?
Yeah. But approximately 26 of them. Originally they looked at 40. I just counted up on the old map that they have and they show 25, and at the meeting I was told 26. So most of those will be on piles 2 and 3. And they're going to do their best to save this vegetation in here so that they don't cover that up or tear that out.
The 2 tailings on rock from the tunnels on our land, will they just remain exactly the same?
There's presently no plan to reclaim those. This, Rudy can correct me, this is mostly, they did come in and take tests of this area. Their bigger concern, these tailings piles, this is mostly rock.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's sterile.
Yeah. So potentially, our plan over the last 2 years has been to clean up this whole area. I don't know what the figure is this year, but last year we figured we hauled out 126 tons of junk off the top of these piles. That effort is completed this summer. I don't have a tonnage figure that we hauled out, but we've done some massive cleanup in here. And I think that presently what the village is talking about is putting in our own islands of vegetation once we get the area cleaned up and to try to reclaim that area by reforesting. An area that we talk about is this mill area. And the future of the village is what do we do with that? Historically, we may want to leave it. I mean, it you can come in and see kind of what was going on up there. There's some concerns about safety. I mean, it's an old structure that could be falling down. Volunteer-wise, I don't think we have the expertise to dismantle that. So no decision's been made on that. I sometimes think that when this whole reclamation project is done and all the islands are planted and the gravel's put on, and when 30 feet of this is knocked down, you won't be able to see tailings pound number one from the village. You would be from the top of Chalet 9, but basically from the village, you wouldn't be able to see the tailings. And I can just hear people saying that Holton Village has never been the same since they ruined those big orange piles.
I noticed that over on the bulletin board they had an offer of a job to any volunteer to work up on the third level. Is that up where you're going up?
Right.
Reclaiming or not reclaiming, but...
Right now it's recycling.
Recycling stuff, okay.
Mm-hmm. What happened to the mill? When we saw photos of it, there was tin roofing and everything, and now the girders are even bent. And I can understand, you know, the removal of that tin exterior sheeting. But what has caused the bending in that of the?
Two things have happened. One, the bending is a result of snow load on what roof remained. And wherever the roof stayed on and the snow accumulated on it, it simply bent those girders, steel girders. And the other thing that happened to the mill was that the company in 1959 let a contract to a salvage firm and allowed them to come into the mill and blast out big steel beams and whatever they wanted and literally took it out. And so it went out from the mill and down through on the lake. So those two things have happened.
What's the green strip between 1 and 2? Is that Copper Creek coming down?
Copper Creek. Now, I might mention in 1964, we had a massive downpour of rain up in Copper Basin, which was very localized. But it changed the course of Copper Creek, it tore into the tailings, and I have pictures of where it ripped out tailings so that the orange material was all removed and it got down into the gray, unoxidized material below. And that's the concern, of course, of the forestry people and the environmentalists, is that another flood, either in Copper Basin or in the upper part of the Railroad Creek Valley, could substantially remove a big chunk of those tailings.
Where do you get your water for your hydro? Does that come out of Copper Creek?
Comes out of Copper Creek. It's diverted. It's diverted up here. Here's our water tank here. It comes out of a diversion dam here and then separates, fills our water tank, and then the rest of it comes down to the hydro here.
But you're not getting enough water to keep your power on all the time.
I can't tell you why. I'm a little surprised that we lost our power this morning. It's this time of year when it starts to cool down and we start to kick on our heaters. But our water flow is still pretty good, so we'll really see sometime in mid-October that Copper Creek will just, it never dries up, but it gets pretty minimal.
When you mention sulfur, what is the effect then of the people that are up here? Are they breathing any of it?
When the wind blows in the wrong direction, normally the wind is down valley and it blows down the valley and we don't get it in the village. But occasionally we get a wind that comes from the east up valley and then it raises a cloud, brings it right into where we are. And if we breathe that, if one has problems with asthma, various kinds of congestion, it is not good. It is bad for your breath, for breathing. So, mainly we don't suffer from that pollution. But yes, it is it's damaging to any of us, but particularly those that have some allergy or some allergicness to that.
Other questions?
Will this change cost hold in anything?
At this
in
point,
dollars and cents.
At this point, there's no financial impact on the village. We may want to help get involved in the revegetation of those islands. And Forest Service has talked to us about that, whether potentially Holden could put together some volunteer crews that would work in conjunction with the Forest Service supervision and revegetate. And that may be an appropriate role for Holden to be involved in.
Does the company, the mining company, have any responsibility, or are they extinct?
No, the mining, you mean Howe Sound Mining Company? No, when they gave the gift, they gave the mineral rights, they gave everything. And they have no further obligation and no further strength.
As far as the tailings that are off?
As far as the tailings or the ore body itself, anything. You know, they have no connection at this point.
What are the terms of the lease from the Forest Service to Holden Village? I didn't realize before that we didn't own Holden Village.
No, we have a special use permit, which Kent can explain to you. We did get the last time a 20-year. Prior to that, there were shorter terms, but now we have what's the maximum that they grant at the present time, which is 20 years.
We pay rent?
We pay rent. We're renters, and we are subject to removal, and we must always remember that. If we're not good citizens in a national forest, you know, they could say that we should not be here, and rightly so.
Good reason for this cooperation, these people.
That's right. And particularly safety and fire. You know, those two are very critical areas.
How long do we have to go on this
claim? What is it, Kent, do you know?
We're only into this one 4 or 5 years.
So we got 15 years, roughly.
The village has 6 different permits. One is the 20-year organizational camp permit. We have a separate permit for the hydroelectric plant, a separate permit for diverting water out of Copper Creek, and a separate permit for our sewage field. We also have a permit for our facilities down at Lucerne, that A-frame cabin that we use as emergency shelter in the winter, and a parking lot area that we use to park our vehicles. And those other permits all expire at different times. We're basically in the process of the village, and the Forest Service sits down annually and is probably reviewing one permit. This year it's been the water permit that we've been reviewing.
I wonder if there's an excess of topsoil, if the village couldn't get a hold of some of that to put on our two areas there to help us replant that. Is that a possibility? Or
it's a possibility. No, the contractor and the Forest Service doesn't know exact quantities of topsoil available in Dan's camp, and there isn't a lot of topsoil in this valley. I mean, very minimal. But there is some in that area, so that potentially we could have access to some of that if there was enough after the contractor was done.
Might also mention that the contractor has agreed to gravel our road even beyond where they're going to widen it.
Yeah, well, as part of the Forest Service contract is when they're done, when the contractor's done, one of their last acts is to put 4 inches of crushed gravel on the road from Dan's camp to 10 Mile Bridge.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a great benefit to the village because it's the road is shy of gravel. It's expensive to get a crusher up here, and we've not been able to do that.
You mentioned that the tailings from the tunnel are sterile, and I'm sure you've given some thought to how they might be used in any productive sense. What things have been experimented with?
Well, what the company did when they first began to generate those tailings, they used them as equivalent of gravel for concrete. You see, so all the concrete contained rocks that came as waste rock from those pumps. And when we started here, whenever we have ever put in anything with concrete, we've gone up to those piles and dug out enough gravel, crushed rock, you see, that could be used in concrete, making a Portland cement.
Road base and
that. Yes, and road bed and so on. And they used a lot of that crushed material to gravel the road down from the village area here all the way down, you see, to the switchback. So much of that gravel is crushed rock that came from the tunnels up here. And they simply hauled it down the road. They didn't have to haul anything up. So that was a good engineering use of the material.
There was some discussion about taking the two waste piles and using that for covering material over the tailings. Mm-hmm. Their two concerns were, one, there's still some remnants of tailings in there, and that wasn't going to get the clean surface that they really wanted. And the other concern is that there, from people who worked during the mine, that there's some reports that those were also used kind of like dumps. And nobody knows really what's down in the heart of those waste piles, and at this point they've decided we don't want to dig down and find out for sure.
And there's another interesting point in that connection. In the early days when they started mining, they kind of high-graded the ore that went into the mill, and they dumped some of the lesser desirable ore on the tops of some of the those two piles. And so we've even entertained the idea of collecting some of that material and processing it if there were ever a processing that went on. There's still some pretty good material that's left in those piles.
What was used in the walls of those buildings up there, they looked something like shredded paper.
They're wood shavings.
They're wood shavings.
They really are, yeah, and it was a wonderful way in which they developed those. You see, they bought those from a firm that developed them. And they could put those up very rapidly, and all they had to do was to put some wire, you know, mesh on either side, and a little cement, and you had a wall, and it was well insulated. Yes, that's local wood.
Will anything be done with the tailings up on the Honeywood Heights tailings?
No, that's an interesting point, too, because there are tailings up there, but you see, the Holden interests that dug in and produced those tailings, they had no mill, so they didn't grind anything down. The only fine material is what they, you know, could result from blasting and digging into the ore body in that way, because Holden could only high-grade the material and bring it out mainly on donkey back, you know, or pack animal. So that the tailings that were left up there, there's a lot of sulfur and sulfide still left in those tailings, but they're rather isolated piles, and they have not been a major concern of pollution.
Well, we thank you for coming and learning about the future of the Holden tailings. It should be an exciting next 3-4 years in the village, watching this process happen and see the impact. I'd surely encourage anyone who hasn't. I think there's a mine hike on at 2:30 or
2:00.
2:00.
Meet at the bell.
Underneath the bell. Elmer Witt, our former director, used to say, you haven't been to Holden Village unless you've been on a mine hike with Rudy Edmonds. Thank you very much.